Folks, she still has it. She still has the leopard print Snuggie.
Look at that shit.
Ancient. It has an ancient artifact.
She is sacred. She sits with me and supports my back at my desk chair every day. It's my back pillow. It's the Cicada print Snuggie.
Well, Jessica and Zach, from the day they were born, they started watching comedy because it was on. She was a golden girl, he had Seinfeld on the brain. They said a 9-year-old Frasier fan might just be insane. Harry and the Hendersons, Mindy and Mork, now Jessica and Zach get together and talk. They'll never say the sitcom's glory days are gone. They'll still watch it because it was on, because it was on.
Because it was on,
because it was on,
because it was on.
Is it too early to set up a Patreon? And I'll call it because it was on, because it was on,
because it was on,
because it was on,
because it was on.
Hello and welcome to Because It Was On. We're like that fancy film podcast, but for people who like to talk about that episode of Veronica's Closet, where Ronnie, an apparently world-famous closet designer played by Kirstie Alley, becomes the subject of a poll in USA Today on whether she should take back her deadbeat ex-husband. I'm Jessica, and I wore my new caftan to a hotel happy hour and ended up leading the parade of Mrs. Roper's at the Three's Company convention happening in the hotel ballroom.
And I'm Zach, and my boss drugged us all and drafted us into the French Foreign Legion as a team-building exercise. Mark is dead.
Mark is dead. You know, these things happen. Casualties in the name of a strong corporate team bond are, you know, completely excusable. Tax write-offs.
Yeah, as I travel through French Guiana to prevent poachers from doing their dirty deeds, I felt like I finally got to know the people in HR.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
You know, when people talk, things happen. Well, Zach, I don't know if you know it, but it's a 90s kind of world.
Oh, in a 90s kind of world, I'm glad I got my fur. I'll keep your head up, what?
It's a 90s kind of world.
And I'm glad I got my girls. When I tell you this week, every response to anything that has happened is literally the most minor inconvenience will happen at work. Like my coworker who I want to get coffee with is 2 minutes late because they're finishing an email, and I will be like, I can't believe you do this to me in a 90s kind of world.
It's the phrase, folks. It's new fetch.
The phrase. It's
We're
the phrase.
We're making it happen. It's like, it's a 90s kind of world.
It's like, you know what? The only dinner I could possibly want is chicken tenders in a 90s kind of world. Like, that's how we're using it.
That's what she said. It is.
It's a 90s
in
kind
this,
of world.
Thanks, Obama. It is in this economy.
Yeah.
It is all wrapped up. It's a very versatile phrase,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah. I highly recommend deploying it at every turn. You know, oh, you know what? Your haircut is perfect for a 90s kind of world. Love it.
It's a 90s kind of world.
It's a 90s kind of world. I just, you know, I can't believe that you would schedule your dog's birthday party when you know for a fact that it is my uncle's stepdaughter's bat mitzvah. 90s kind of world.
I think that we all found out, or at least queer people did, the power of just randomly, apropos of nothing, saying during Pride Month, and this is what you can use the other 11 months.
Yeah.
It's just to keep.
During a 90s kind of world?
Yeah.
In my 90s kind of world, I cannot believe you would do this. So go ahead and do that. And if you didn't know it, if you haven't guessed it by now, that is a key lyric from the fantastic Chef's Kiss of a theme song for Living Single. The show that Zachary and I got to learn a lot about this week.
Yeah, this was a grassroots movement. Our most requested show, I believe.
Literally. We got asked from maybe our third episode to start talking about Living Single. And so it's been a minute. Thank you all for continually requesting this, but easily our most requested episode to talk, or show to talk about, Living Single.
Yeah, it's been on our short list forever, but Jessica and I constantly draft a production schedule of what we're going to do.
Out the window.
But then we'll just randomly be like, I kind of want to do Facts of Life.
Yeah, we'll sit and we'll be like, okay, we're going to have a production meeting. Here's everything we're going to do for like the next 10 weeks. And then, you know, you start thinking about it and you're like, but like, actually Facts of Life, right? And then it's blown up. And then once I blow it up, then Zach blows it up. And Zach's like, I've really been interested in Wizards of Waverly Place lately. So maybe we should do that. And then it's all out the window from there. But, here we are. We've spent the whole week watching Living Single. And again, banger of a theme song. I absolutely cannot stress that enough.
The post-credits songs as well, where Queen Latifah will sometimes just, like, give her Sermon on the Mount.
There's a post-credit where Queen Latifah's just playing Unity.
U-N-I-T-Y. U-N-I-T-Y. That's a Unity.
Love it. Love it. She's, love Queen Latifah in every form.
There's
honestly,
nothing but
hits,
folks.
One of my stray observations from the show is like, okay, so you watch the show, you watch enough episodes, and it's clear that the actor who plays Kyle, he wants to sing. He's putting the bug in the ear of the producers that he wants to sing. And what a tragedy that you're the actor on the show who's like trying to pull the Dixie Carter, I want to sing move, but you're sharing a show with Queen Latifah. Sorry.
That's rough.
Sorry.
Didn't do you any favors, my friend.
Like, he's got a lovely voice. You're doing a great job, you know? The speakeasy episode, excellent.
My funny Valentine.
Baby, you're hitting the notes, but I'm sorry. Queen Latifah sang like three songs earlier, and it's like, I'm just going to rewind to that. So this is a show that ran on Fox from 1993 to 1998. As we've stated many times over, this was originally conceived of as Queen Latifah and Kim Cole's vehicle. So they were like the two stars attached to it, and the show was kind of like built up around them. And Zach, I don't know about you, but I did not watch this show growing up. Did you?
I was not a big fan of Living Single. I didn't run into it.
That's what I want to talk about that. I never ran into it, and I want to talk about why. So if you happen to just be joining us on this journey, perhaps we released a banger of a TikTok on Living Single this week. I don't know the future. You know, maybe we did. And so you're joining us. I think the important thing to note here, let's get it away up front at the top. If you couldn't tell by our TikTok avatars or our logo or our voices and the way we're talking at this exact moment in time, Zach and I are both white people. We're a white. He's a white, I'm a white. We're a white. Which means that we're going to talk about a black sitcom today. And we are going to do our absolute best to get things, you know, correct. But obviously, we're not going to be able to speak from the black experience in terms of not only the importance of this show, but like a lot of the things that the show was trying to say. But what I definitely think I can speak to is the very like racist constructs that exist in the world of syndication that made it so that my like 12-year-old little white ass in the suburbs of Chicago never saw this show growing up.
Yeah. About like us talking about this show, think that it's an important show in like the history of black sitcoms. We haven't covered a lot about the topic of black sitcoms. We've talked about The Cosby Show, we've talked about Family Matters, we've talked about Smart Guy and a few others, but we, as the topic of black sitcoms. We haven't really touched on it much, even though it is a very important part of American cultural history.
Hell yeah.
And like American comedy, it has a complicated history through radio shows all the way to Norman Lear and like the golden age of 90s sitcoms. It's a big, big topic. And at some point, I do want to like do a 1,000-foot view of black sitcoms because it is like its own history and it's super interesting.
Yeah.
But for Living Single, it is a great show that is sort of like the early part of the golden age of black sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
The Cosby Show is like, really was like a broken dam. There were more and more shows following it. And like, and then A Different World sort of made the tradition into young black sitcoms. And Living Single came out shortly after that.
Totally. And then I think as you get like the advent of Fox, as well as the advent of cable, you now have a lot more stations that are broadcasting to more like niche markets. And like, while I don't think the black population is like a niche market, right, in the mind of like very racist and old school television producers, yeah, they're going to think of it as a niche market. So as you get that, and then those shows end up doing well because it's not all that of a niche market, right? Those shows start doing well, so the networks feel a lot more empowered to start making programming for like different demographics. And so that's how you get shows like Hanging with Mr. Cooper and Martin and like the Wayans Brothers comedies. Those all sort of come from that era of like very early 90s, post advent of cable and like the expansion of other shows targeted to non-white demographics, networks realizing like, oh, those make money? Really? Seriously though, like at this point in time, again, this is when you start to get a lot more, and that's where Living Single came from. So it came from Yvette Lee Bowser. She worked on Hanging with Mr. Cooper and I think
A Different World,
yeah, which was early black sitcoms, and then she was kind of tapped to create her own thing. And Queen Latifah and Kim Coles were also sort of scouted by Warner Brothers at this point in time to lead their own comedy. And so they basically said, you guys get together and like figure it out, create something. And out of that, we get Living Single.
Yeah. And so we watched it. We dove deep. We agreed to watch 10. I watched a bit more than that.
Easily watched at least 30 episodes in this last week. Just had it on in the background constantly.
Yeah, that's what you got to do when you have a television podcast, folks. The movie podcast people, they have it so fucking easy.
They have it so easy. Let's be real. We have 127 episodes of this television show to try to get through in a week. Baby.
And then every single time we're gonna make an ass out of ourselves because we can't watch all of it.
Every single time. And so then somebody is gonna say, well, of course Regine is clearly an ally of other women because she does X, Y, and Z in this one episode. And I'm sorry, but it was not on any of the top 10 lists.
I'm sorry. We can't watch all of it. Listen, donate to our non-existent Patreon. We'll quit our jobs. We'll watch TV full time.
Yeah.
And we'll just like Clockwork Orange style every week watch entire series.
But fine. I feel like I got to watch a lot of Living Single.
Yeah.
And will be watching more for sure.
Yes. It's so good.
It's so good. I loved Living Single. I loved this show. Like, it wasn't just the theme song that grabbed me, folks. I was like caught up from episode one. The second, here's where I'll tell you where the show got me. We obviously started with the pilot, right? Who doesn't start with the pilot? So we're starting with the pilot, and Regine's got a new man. He's like a chef, and they're doing like a story on the chef. Woman walks into the publishing agency to chat up Sinclair, and she's like, oh, I'm here to submit something for chef blah, blah, blah. And she goes, oh, I know him. And then the woman goes, how do you know my husband? And I went, because that means Regine is dating a married man.
Hi. I'd like to take out a full page ad for my restaurant.
I can handle that for you.
Okay, well, here's our logo and a check.
Okay. Blue Bayou, Tiana Graham and Brad Hamilton. Oh, I know Brad.
Oh, really? How do you know my husband?
How do I know your husband? How do I know your husband? And that is the second this show had me, I said tea. Absolute tea.
Yes, let's get
hooked,
it.
Hooked, baby. I am absolutely hooked on phonics. Let's go. I was ready for everything from that moment on. And I am like, I am a devotee. I love it. And then, baby, we're starting to get into it. I know we're going to get into these characters, but God damned if I am not ready to sacrifice a goat to Maxine.
Okay, I have lots of feelings about all of these characters. Sinclair is definitely, like,
Sinclair,
if we're doing
you,
the Golden
already,
Girls division, I am
do the
Sinclair.
Golden Girls! Fuck! You beat me to it! God damn it, Zachary! Because I put them all already in the Golden Girls schema. Because, so the thing about living single, which is a weird thing amongst television shows, I've never seen another show have this effect so much. Living single gets talked about in reference to other shows, like, more than any other sitcom I've ever watched. In the sense that, like, you don't ever hear Living Single talked about, like, outside of its relationship with, like, Friends or Seinfeld or other contemporaries. So I feel really shitty doing this up top. But Living Single, I think, strongest parallel is to the Golden Girls.
It's about their friendship. It is about the yes. girls living in
it's
a 90s type of
the
world.
Girls. About the girls, yes, living like that. There's so much to say about it, but yes, I plotted them all on the Golden Girls matrix by episode 2. Sinclair is absolutely Rose, which means Sinclair is absolutely Zachary.
Yep.
And So I actually want to know your rating of the girlies.
Oh, like how I match them up.
Yeah. Should we go through their characters first and then do the matchup, or should we do the matchup? Yeah,
we should probably say what Living Single is.
Yes, we should. Okay, but we could do, I don't know about you, but in like researching the topic, there is a trope with how Living Single is talked about. Can I do the trope for you?
Yeah.
Six singles living in the big city, looking for love and having misadventures along the way. Did you think I was talking about Friends? I'm talking about Living Single.
Yes. Jeez.
Every single time. Six singles in the 90s looking for love. Every time.
We're not talking about Friends.
You thought we were talking about Friends. Egg on your face. It's Living Single. Every time. Every fucking article I read thought that they were being cute as fuck. With this little bit. I'm telling you, not cute as fuck. I hate it. And we'll talk about it. Like, that, we're going to cap it off on the end, talking a little bit about Living Single and, like, the comparison to Friends. I'm not saying there's no conversation there. But, like, I hate this trope. Stop talking about Living Single in the same breath as Friends every fucking time. Because it's a so much better show with other shit going on. And it doesn't need that comparison right up top, in my opinion.
Yeah, I get the anger of Living Single fans now.
Yes.
Because it's so much better. It's so much smarter. It's so much more empathetic. The characters grow. The characters love. And they have these full lives. It is so fucking relatable. And
I think that's part of its downfall in the end. We'll talk about it. But I agree. Like, if you were like, I'm going to Clockwork Orange you. And it's Living Single or Friends. God, give me Living Single twice.
I did the Clockwork Orange for our Ross and Rachel episode, and no, never again.
Yeah.
It's on the list with The Office now.
Yeah. But Living Single, what it's about. So there's a brownstone in New York City. I believe they're in Brooklyn. And in one apartment on the ground floor, you have three ladies. You have Khadijah James, played by Queen Latifah, who, love her. She's doing great work in this. You have Kim Coles, who plays Sinclair James Jones. Well, she becomes James Jones, initially just James. And then rounding out the ladies in the apartment, you have a legend in her own right. Fresh off the heels of portraying one Tootie Ramsey, we have Kim Fields, who is playing Regine Hunter. So those are our girlies in the apartment, but they have a bestie who lives across the street, Maxine, or otherwise known as Max, played by Erica Alexander, who is showing up all the fucking time, and I love her. I am worshiping you, Maxine. You are my goddess. I will be, you know, recruiting for that particular religion. And then if you care about the boys, if you happen to care about the boys, there are two men who live upstairs. We have Kyle Barker, played by Terrence Carson. And then we have Overton. Overton Wakefield, played by John Henton. God bless Overton.
I think I had this thought when I was watching. It's like, I think I'm in love with Overton.
I'm in love with Overton, too. Hands up. Hands, everyone right now listening to the podcast, thank you. Thank you, first of all. Thank you so much for being here. Please put your hand up right now. No judgment. If you're in love with Overton. Thank you, entire listening audience, for putting your hand up. Because if you're not in love with Overton, you shouldn't be here.
You're making some mistakes.
You're making a huge mistake. Because Overton is for the girls.
He is. He is the ideal man.
Overton is absolutely for the girls. They made him for us, honey. He has no allegiance to the boys. Overton is for the girls.
That's actually such a good way of putting it, because he will betray the boys so much. There's no, like, solidarity.
There is no solidarity. Like, there is no loyalty. Overton is not for the boys. He is for the girls.
Yep. He read, like, the feminine mystique, and he was like...
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
I'm ride or die for the girls now.
Yeah. Overton is for the girls, and we love him. But the show in and of itself is about these six people. So the four girls and the two boys, and they're in their like late 20s, early to late 20s. And by the end of the show in their 30s, they're single, right? They're starting out their careers. They're trying to make stuff work. Khadijah is the editor in chief of Flavor Magazine. So a magazine targeted mostly to black women in New York. So she's trying to make that work. Sinclair is her cousin slash assistant. Regine works at a boutique. Max is a lawyer. Kyle is a stockbroker. And Overton is a handyman. And so they really sort of make the spread of class there. But it's all of them just mostly in this apartment, right? Most of the show takes place in the apartment building. And they're just living and laughing their way and loving their way through their 20s.
Yeah, and it just, I said it before, it hits so, so close to home of just, like, what being in your 20s is.
Oh, yes.
Like, the Friends was always, like, an unattainable fantasy, which was a big draw for people, you know, but living single is what it was.
I mean, to be fair, if we're saying unattainable fantasy... They are living in, like, a brownstone in New York City. Yeah. And, like, the only... Like, I believe maybe Kyle and Maxine can afford it. End of list.
Yeah, I guess maybe they have some sort
of... The real estate's not working out. But I would say, like, how they interact with each other feels very real. And, like, it's this show is for the girls. I understand that Kyle and Overton are there. Overton is for the girls. Kyle is our, like, villain. I think in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like, he's our foil for the girls. And then and then there's the girls. Like, even the theme song is about that in a 90s kind of world. I'm glad I got my girls. Like, this is a show about and for female friendship. And I absolutely love it.
Incredible, incredible show. So, Jessica, when it comes to living single, what themes are we going to be talking about? Like, how?
Do we need to break down the characters?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And let's do the Golden Girls. I was about to say, I'm also owed your Golden Girls breakdown. Okay, let's see if we agree. So, we already established Sinclair is Rose.
Yeah, Sinclair is Rose, Khadijah is Dorothy.
Khadijah is Dorothy. And then we have Regine as Blanche, and we have Max as Sophia.
Max is Sophia? I got him switched.
Oh, you have a little flippy floppy.
Because Max is like low-key cleaning up every goddamn night.
Oh yeah, like, Max is catching the D. That's for sure. Yep. Max is catching the D. I love that in the flashback episode that like the impetus for Max to save, like agree to try to help save that the old jazz club is that the woman who owned it was a sexual harasser. She's like, I'm in now. You sold me 100%.
I'm not helping you save the place. I might bring a twisted smile to that grotesque face.
See, this is interesting. Shames the showboat's proprietor was a woman who took pleasure in humiliating her male employees.
I see what I can do.
Here's my logic behind it. Regine's whole thing is about bagging a man. That's all Regine wants. She wants to bag a man. Whereas Max is the wisecracker. She's the tell-it-like-it-is wisecracker who's popping into the apartment to read every single bitch to filth and then out. That's Sophia. Whereas Blanche is also here to bag a man. Now, Regine and Blanche are doing it in a different way. Regine's trying to get the bag. Like, she's trying to marry a man. She's trying to marry a rich man so she has, like, comfort. Blanche is just doing it for the love of the game. That's the difference. Yeah. But that's why I had my ranking the way I had my ranking. That's my logic.
I think, honestly, yours is better as far as, like, the purpose that the characters serve in, like, the episode-to-episode mechanics of just, like, you have, like, the wisecracker that's leaning back, that's, like, smarter than the other ones in it, like, their own little way. I would say that it's probably just that's where the Golden Girls comparison ends because it's not a perfect matchup with those.
Not two. A perfect matchup, but I think it's actually the show it shares like almost the most DNA with, to be honest. And that's probably a hot take for everybody listening. I think Living Single shares.
I agree. I just don't think that it's a 1-to-1.
No. Well, also the Golden Girls are like 60. And these are hot 20-somethings.
Hot 20-somethings going to the club.
Let's just start talking about Khadijah.
Yeah. So Khadijah, very much a Dorothy.
Very much.
In the pilot, I was like, this is the Dorothy. This is how I know. Because pilots tend to sometimes be a little bit clunky, a little bit, you haven't found the vibe yet. And Khadijah was just stomping around her office savagely attacking all of her friends and coworkers.
Honey, it's a stretch limo. Well, good, it'll go with your stretch marks.
Just
as Dorothy like, would, yeah.
Yeah, like they wanted to sort of establish that she was a Dorothy type, Kraken, and you know, with like the acerbic wit, but they hadn't really gotten the rhythm yet, and so it just. The lines were just so like, what the fuck did she do to you?
Which is funny because I feel like that's how Max becomes.
Yeah.
Max just becomes like, I will eviscerate any human that steps foot within my radius. Khadijah is like, she's for the most part, honestly, like our straight man, right? She's the person through which the chaos of the world is kind of being filtered. She was the biggest star. Queen Latifah was the biggest star going into it, followed like right on our heels by Kim Coles. And so like I would say like the show kind of wants you to believe, I guess, that this is the person whose narrative we're like following more than anything. She's our anchor. But the show doesn't really have an anchor if you really think about it. It's very much an ensemble piece. Which I want to like put a pin in for a later conversation, but that's Khadijah. She's incredibly smart. Here's what I'm gonna say. I might be biased because Queen Latifah has since come out of the closet, but you cannot tell me Khadijah is not a closeted lesbian.
Yeah, I don't want to... It's complicated. I don't want to take away from anyone's relationship with the show, but it is hard to read it as anything other than...
There will be a situation where they're all getting ready to hang out with men, and, like, all the girls will be like, oh, he's fine, like, I love him, and then, like, Khadijah will be like, yeah, me too. Yeah. He is hot. I'm gonna mac.
I bet he sweats in the good way.
So there's just no reading that I believe where Khadijah's just not a closeted lesbian. Listen, there's an episode where, like, a hot man moves into the building, and they're all trying to mac on this hot man, get him to choose them. And you're telling me that the woman who comes out and she's like, I'm gonna nab this man, and here's my ploy, is I'm gonna do basketball good. I'm sorry, you're a lesbian.
This was her working through her youth. She hadn't found herself yet.
She hadn't found herself.
She's like, oh, I like that man so much, I wanna play basketball.
I'm gonna get him by dribbling it through my legs.
We play basketball so good we don't even need to have sex.
And they didn't. You cannot tell me that Khadijah is not a closeted lesbian. Look, and I understand I'm biased because I know Queen Latifah is a lesbian. But that is absolutely the energy being brought. Is watching this, you go, how did anybody in the 90s, how are we so naive as a group of human beings that we weren't clocking? Hey, maybe Khadijah's gay.
Maybe, like, where they randomly cut to her costume change in a new scene, and she is in, like an oversized jersey.
And she's just, like, Khadijah's in a new vest, guys. Scene, she's just in a new vest.
Yeah, let's have that talk. I literally, had a moment of crisis where I was like, do I not know Queen Latifah's story as well as I thought I did? And I googled, when did Queen Latifah come out of the closet? Because I thought, like, clearly they're planting something with these.
With these, I'm going to seduce him by basketballing good.
Yeah, the wardrobe, it just seems like there's some sort of code happening. But no, she came out much later.
Like 2015. Yeah. Like, it is a fairly recent development. Living Single was off the airs for like 2 decades.
Yeah.
But look, it's just how I read it. I love Queen Latifah. She's absolutely slaying. And I'm glad that she's like out now and living her absolute best life. I just wish Khadijah could have done the same thing. Because I feel like poor Khadijah. I
want that for her.
Khadijah, the show ended. Khadijah's in the closet. And Khadijah's still there. She's stuck in that closet. I want to get her out. Khadijah, come to the light, mama.
Again, we can't watch all of the episodes. So we skip around a lot to try to get a sampling of the different eras of the shows. But I skipped to season 4 and she was in a long distance relationship with the man. I was like, yeah you are. Yep.
Yep.
Oh, what a pity.
Oh, you got a boyfriend in Canada, Khadijah? Well, I know you just wish you were here so you could touch him.
Yep. Oh, it was amazing. It's like the Da Vinci Code of like Queen Latifah. It's like his.
But I don't so Khadijah, outside of being a deeply closeted woman, she's a businesswoman. She is our straight man, ironically, through most of the series. She's the person we center on, the person through which we view most of the show. She's got some good wisecracks. It's not like she's without her humor. She's a funny girl as well. But I would say she's our grounding force.
Yeah, I would say that as we develop different sitcom terms and like concepts to help us understand sitcoms in Because It Was On, I'm going to propose a soft anchor versus a strong anchor for shows like Saved by the Bell, Strong Anchor.
Strong Anchor.
Zach Morris can literally control time.
This is true.
And I think that Khadijah is a soft anchor. Like, she's the show anchor. Is very comfortable, like, leaving her. And, like, doing, like, B-plots or even, like, whole episodes where she's not the thing. But it does kind of, like, there is an understanding that she is the main character.
Yeah, I would say that's
like,
true.
Like, the central character.
I would say that's true, yeah. But then we have her cousin, Sinclair, played by Kim Coles. The gorgeous Kim Coles.
Gorgeous, the most charismatic person I've ever seen.
I mean, like, gorgeous, charismatic, hilarious. I love Kim Coles. I had known about her outside of Living Single as just, like, kind of a personality before. And, like, I always thought she was gorgeous, but, like, watching her, she's just so winning. Like, you just want to spend time with her. I love her.
Yeah, she just feels like... I know her. I was having, like, a parasocial relationship with Khadijah, Sinclair, and Overton. Very charismatic people. Very much, like, they were embodying, like, this is, we're in our 20s, yes. Baby. Sinclair, Overton, charismatic. Sinclair is just, like, the avatar of, like, you are in your Fleabag era. Just sort of, like, you're a little bit sloppy. You're dumb in all the most charming ways. You could say that Sinclair is a quote, dumb character, like the traditional, like, fourth wheel that is there to be dumb and say, like, the comedically stupid lines.
Yeah.
But she really is just so, it's the most mild version of it that I can think of.
Yeah.
Where she just seems like a real person that's sometimes kind of confused.
Yeah, she's a little naive.
Yeah.
It's
like, you know, Rose shouldn't be allowed to drive, but Sinclair is just like a person.
Yeah, Sinclair, she's just the dumbest person you know. Like, yeah. The dumbest functional person that you know. That's definitely how I would describe her. Look, Sinclair chooses joy. And Sinclair chooses fun. That's Sinclair.
Yeah, I don't even think she's, like, super dumb. She's just, like, I mean, she got Overton, so she's making good life decisions.
She's making good decisions about her life. That is a fact, yeah. She chose to leave Minnesota, come to Brooklyn. She's a giant troll doll when she moves in. You know, this is Sinclair. That's her.
Yeah. Regine, who we haven't talked about yet. In the pilot, they set up the dynamic that Regine is, like, chasing a man with money and status.
Yeah.
And that's what she's hoping for herself. And then they plant the seed that Overton and Sinclair are going to get together early.
Yeah.
Like, where they literally have one scene where they're establishing Regine's ambitions. To get a wealthy man. And then the next scene is, like, Sinclair flirting with the maintenance guy, Overton.
Yeah.
And so they want different things and...
Very different things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sinclair chooses joy. Sinclair chooses happiness. Sinclair is not chasing financial security. That's not what she's after. Sinclair wants the love story.
Yeah.
But Regine is not a girl's girl.
She's not here. She is the anti-Overton.
Regine is not here for the girls. She is not a girl's girl. Regine is here for the boys. 100%.
Yeah, this is Kim Fields' character.
Kim Fields. Very much Tootie, like... from The Facts of Life. Let's not forget.
Yeah, so this character is like a Blairified Tootie. It's not, she doesn't go full Blair because she doesn't
have enough.
Yeah, yeah. she doesn't have quite the privilege of Blair, but she has, like, sort of lots of personality traits of Blair.
She's very, very self-absorbed. I mean, like,
in the early seasons, she's the character that grows the most.
Yeah, she's definitely the character that grows the most, for sure. I do think that, like, the way that you can really understand Regine at all is that Regine is a woman who grew up in the projects. So Regine grew up very, very poor. And she's often very embarrassed of that fact as well. But she did. Regine grew up very, very poor. And so Regine's entire thing is that she is chasing a wealthy man, right? And so if you really break it down as to like why Regine is the way she is, and you're looking for sympathy for this character, she's searching for safety, right? That's this whole thing that she's doing. Everything that she's doing, she's looking for a man to take care of her because Regine's, you know, she's not going back to the projects. Like that is her ultimate motivation. And so I do think that there's actually within the show a lot of empathy for the character for that fact. So they'll be empathetic to the character, and then they'll also use it to like knock her down a peg as well, to be like, you're acting all bougie right now, but let's not forget where, like, from whence you came, Regine. And like one of the things she consistently has to overcome is like her feelings for a man that she had who like also came from the projects with her. And like trying to reconcile, like, I feel for this person, but also like I have this vision for my life that is rooted in safety and comfort of wealth that a man will provide to me, and I will get that by being beautiful and sexy and fuck any girl that stands in my way.
And that is such a like incredible thing for a sitcom to establish. There are other, like, in other genres, this theme is explored. But in sitcoms, it is so, like, the gold digger trope of, like, yes, sitcoms depict all the time women that are trying to, like, bag the man. But the way that they just depict that, like, yeah, I understand feminism. I understand all the taglines. But I am scared about not being stable. Yeah. And I'm looking for the best way to keep me safe. And 100%. Like, there's a lot of fear and a lot of like soul searching with that.
She shares a lot of DNA with like Fran Fine from The Nanny. Like they share a lot of DNA where like, yeah, I get feminism, but I'm trying to eat. Like I'm trying to eat tonight, baby. And this is the tool set that I have and the skill set that I have to go and do that. And so I think like, yeah, I'll fuck over the girls if it means that I'm going to be able to sit here and stay a little bit longer and talk to this man who is a partner at this Wall Street firm. So sorry they kicked you out of the poker game, but I'm going to sit here on his arm for a little bit. And that's Regine. Regine is not a girl's girl, but they give you a lot of reasons why Regine is not a girl's girl.
Khadija and Maxine, they will sometimes like lecture or chastise her about like, hey, you need to be an independent woman, and it's like, cool, that's real neat and useful advice from a fucking lawyer and the editor of a magazine,
like I didn't go to Howard with you.
I have a different strategy I'm pursuing, not that I love the empathy that they give these characters. I love a show that loves its characters.
Yes, and that's one thing I want to say later on, is I think one of the problems with Living Single is it is too kind to its characters.
Oh, interesting. Okay, we'll stick with what I just said, but we'll argue about it.
No. I think it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. I think it's the problem with longevity of the show. We'll come back to it. I think that's why Living Single had 5 seasons, and that's it. One of the many. The other one is racism. We'll talk about that. But it's, if we're talking story-wise, that's one of the problems that I have with the show. But like that's why they gave Sinclair Overton in the first season, and they never waver from that. It's just too kind to its characters for like a show. It's like it's really like,
oh, you mean on a conflict level? Okay, yeah.
Like it's too kind to its characters for like a show to sustain its trajectory. I want the characters to have the things they like too. I like that because I like them.
What I meant when I said I love a show that loves its characters is like my favorite creator right now is Taika Waititi. And one of the things that I just think is notable about all of his work is that he refuses to dehumanize people.
Yeah, I agree with
writing.
You. I agree with you.
And I think that Living Single has a lot of that, where it's just everybody, they get their say and you see how their mind works.
100%. I agree with that completely. And I love that about Living Single too. So in terms of like developing its characterization, I think I don't have any problems with that. From a story perspective, it's too kind to its characters.
Yes. Okay, but, I agree with that.
So we talked about Regine. We talked about Khadijah. We talked about Sinclair. We finally get to my girl, Maxine. I love Maxine.
Maxine, she's powerful. She's elegant.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
She's rocking those, like, long 90s blazers with the...
Yeah. She's tall and thin. She has these like dreaded, she has a dreaded bob. So it's an angled bob, but dreaded. A couple of the dreads are like a little longer than the other ones, giving it like a little asymmetry. She's tall. She's dark skinned with the most like clear, even complexion I have ever seen on a human being. Like Max's skin is flawless. Yes. It is flawless. There is not a single like micron of her skin that is not like the perfect tone compared to the rest of her face. She's gorgeous. And she's a lawyer and she's smart and she's mean and she's a feminist and she hates men and I love her.
She's such like a rich character. One thing that I want to note about Living Single at large, but mostly a lot with just Maxine, is it gets weirdly Shakespearean with its language sometimes. And lines will jump out at me about like it just has like meter and it's like so elevated in the talk. Like this is like 20 somethings talking to each other, but then like in the pilot episode, Maxine walks onto the scene and like her first line is she raises her hands in triumph and she said,
"Today my look and my law were fierce. I got my client the house, the Winnebago, alimony, and 70% of all the assets he tried to conceal. I left that man with nothing but a lint ball and half a Tic Tac. Ha! Don't touch me unless you want to get burned! Work, Miss Hunt."
Woo! And she's a fucking divorce, like her first thing is she's a divorce lawyer and she helped that girl get it all.
Yeah.
And then
she is just like, which is just like the a fantasy, like this like fun spicy kind of feminism for you, like,
oh yeah,
you just it's like the fantasy job of just like I clock in every day and I help
women. I help women screw over there. I help women. Yeah. I help the ex get everything. And then Kyle's like, I feel bad for the man. And she said, they had a Winnebago. You know they're white. I fucking love it. I fucking love Maxine. Yeah, she's a divorce lawyer. She does go through like career tribulations at some point where she's not able to like work as a lawyer for a little bit. But for the most of the series, she's just a ball busting business baddie.
She is here to ruin lives.
She's here to ruin lives and she's here to ruin men. She is the most sitcom-y in her writing in the sense of like, she says devastating, friendship-ending things to everyone around her every day, all the time. Like, that is Maxine's character.
And again, it would be so easy to, like, for this to be a very inhuman character. There are tons of examples of two-dimensional, like, cut-out, ball-busting feminists. But that's not Maxine, because, like, she has, like... Her struggle to like make it in this career with like everything fighting against her and like that she needs to be strong like this.
Yeah.
But you see so much in Maxine that she wants to be like, she still has the craving of being taken care of, but because she can't allow her, because she often doesn't trust men, it seems, she looks to her friends to take care of her, and she often is soliciting, kind of being babied by her friends. It's kind 100%. Of a laugh line, but it's very endearing as well.
Yeah. It's like she, like, there.
She likes her socks being tucked on the top. She's like a grown-ass woman. She's a lawyer, and she's like, can you tuck my socks at the top and not roll them into a ball?
Yeah. There's lots of ways to definitely read the way that Maxine treats the other girls in the series. And yeah, she does look to them to take care of her. And I think the, like, implication is that, like, she helps financially there in terms of, like,
I want to know what their rent situation is. Is it like a progressive tax situation?
Like, Maxine's there a lot. That's why they take her chair from her massage chair. At one point, like, Maxine gets a massage chair and they take it from her because she's like, they're like, you owe us money, Maxine, because the amount of time you spend here eating our food and doing our shit. But yeah, like,
they fuck that. I'm going to install a meter that you have to put a dollar in to use my massage chair.
Yeah. There's no fucking over Maxine. There's no winning an argument with Maxine. Maxine will win. There is no fucking her over. She will fuck you back harder. There is no fucking over Maxine.
She will serve both looks and the law, my friends.
She will serve both looks and the law. And that's a fact of the matter. I live for Maxine. Interestingly, she has it's almost a will they, won't they. I would call it more like a lover or like an enemies to lovers situation with Kyle. I don't love it. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't feel like there's any actual real sexual tension between these two actors.
Kyle is, I guess you can sort of do a soft transition to Kyle. Kyle is just very arrogant about his misogyny, and it's like painted in a specific way of like him being naive, like just like swallowed a bunch of bullshit as a child, and he needs to learn about the world and learn to respect women. He is the character that walks up to the line of being irredeemable, and it just takes like one step back.
Which, like, the joke of the show is that like he never gets laid, really.
Yeah, the show challenges this.
Women do not like him. Like, he's meant to be a punching bag, and he and Max are meant to play off each other in that way, right? Yeah. Like Kyle is constantly punished by the world of living single, so it's not like they're endorsing Kyle's behavior, but that is who Kyle is. And he's also, at the exact same time, very arrogant, and he is also very vain. Like, he dresses and accessorizes. And it's very flamboyant in that way, but it's like a flamboyant, like, machismo in the way that he dresses and puts himself together.
Listen, yeah, another great line from Living Single. Again, it's a 90s type kind of world. And he says, like, I believe in the pilot. You have, it's the 90s, you have to be a modern man. A modern man knows how to accessorize. And I love his paisley suits, his, like, suit vests.
He's got a lot of vests. He's got a lot of embroidered vests. He definitely hit the suit store.
Absolutely. He has a few plot lines. I think that it's a recurring theme with him. About he is making it in like a white corporate world, and he is he often says he's a self-proclaimed proud black man who wants to preserve his like dignity. About he talks about his heritage a lot and wanting to maintain this dignity, and there's this like struggle that he has. It's a recurring theme of not wanting to compromise, and just like the obvious example would be the episode where he is pressured to cut his hair,
right?
And in order to give it a quote more corporate look, through the whole episode, like worrying about it, and like because he is like the greed is good guy, like who doesn't care about anything but money, but he's like, am I really going to cut my hair because these white executives have a hang up about it, and he ultimately refuses to do it.
When I joined this firm about 3 years ago, I believed it to be a place where a person advanced because of his or her ability. But I've come to realize that this firm values the superficial over the substantial. But I cannot violate my personal integrity. My hair is not just for fashion. It's part of my heritage. It is a statement of pride. A statement, by the way, which could show our clients that this firm is not only progressive when investing its money, but also progressive when investing in its people. So, gentlemen, whether you decide to promote me or not, I will not change my hair.
Woo! Okay.
It's actually very complicated, Cindy, because there's that other...
I think we'll talk more about it too. Yeah. We can dive into that further. But like here, I think your point still stands that Kyle he's very proud, and so on the one hand, like he very much understands like what it is to be or to like experience that prejudice, right, of racism and how that holds him back in the workplace. But he is very comfortable with misogyny, and I think the show wants that to be an element that is a consistent like point that is pushed on for Kyle, is like you understand it but then also you perpetrate. And I think the show is very interested in this idea of a person who like experiences oppression and then also oppresses. It's a very common thing that comes through across a lot of episodes of Living Single that I think we'll talk a little bit more about. Before we dive too deep in, we have one more character, our king of kings, our sweet baby angel, Overton.
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 Just, I want to, there's that cult that like worships Severus Snape and like tries to like will him into existing or something. It's been a while since I read the article. But if anybody wants to hit me up, we can start an Overton cult.
Yeah, I'm open for an Overton cult as well. Like I said, Overton's for the
Snape
girls.
Snape wives. They're called Snape wives. They're like married to the Lord, but it's Snape.
There's a concept in, I believe it's Jewish folklore, but I could be wrong. Somebody will correct me. Called a tulpa. Are you aware of a tulpa?
No, this seems like a very... Zach-like cul-de-sac, though. I love this already.
How did I know that you would say that? So I believe it's like highly like something like that. General idea is stolen from like Jewish theology, but it's been sort of mingled with like theosophy and mysticism and like the paranormal. But it's this idea that like something can be materialized from thought. Right? If we all believe in it together enough spiritually, it will actually materialize. We will will it into being, right? So that Snape, in your example, he would be a tulpa, right? A creation of thought. Lots of people believe this is like what ghosts are, vampires and mythical creatures and fairies, right? They're tulpas. They're things that we, as like a culture, because we talk about them more, we give them more power, we create them as thought beings. And, Overton as a character, I believe, is a tulpa created from the subconscious of women.
Yeah.
Like we all collectively agree that these are the things we want, and then Overton appeared to fulfill our desires.
Yeah.
He's a handyman. He's handsome. He's respectful. He will fucking beat a bitch down if they disrespect Sinclair or any of Sinclair's friends. Overton will always do the right thing.
His, and what's great about him is just it's instinctual for him. It's that fantasy of you respect women just because you do.
Just because you know.
Not
it's
for
the
any
right
sort of performative. It's not because you saw a powerful YouTube essay.
No. There was a whole episode like about. He and Sinclair had been dating for a few months and they hadn't slept together yet. And Sinclair wasn't sure if she wanted to. And Overton never pressured her for even a single second. It was like the entire plot of the Boy Meets World episode where they're like think they're gonna have sex, but it's with like 20 somethings, right? So like there's like this heightened like, why aren't you having sex yet? Like, oh, why didn't that already happen? And like Sinclair is just like so not sure if she wants to. And there isn't even a moment in time where Sinclair does the like the frustrated man thing of like any woman who's ever turned down a man for sex knows exactly what I'm talking about, where they like dramatically like huff and like turn over and like get on their phone or start playing a video game, and then you're like, are you okay? And
I hope you're noticing how much I'm respecting you right now.
Fine. It's fine. I'm fine. Not for a second. Overton's like, you know what? We could still have a beautiful, nice little evening. Let me play some music. You can still enjoy the mini Snickers that I bought for you. And we can dance together. And it's okay if you're not ready, because I know that eventually you will be. And I'll be here and like I'll worship you when that time comes. And there's one point. I could go on about Overton for a decade. There's one point when they're talking about like how they all came to get together. And there's a moment where they're talking about how Sinclair almost never moved to Brooklyn. And then Overton said, and then my heart would have been in Minneapolis and I wouldn't have known why.
If Max hadn't moved out, I couldn't have moved in.
Yeah, and if Kyle hadn't invited me to move to New York, my heart would have been in Minneapolis and I wouldn't have known why.
And there's no man has ever said anything even 10% that romantic to me in my entire life. And I'm wrecked. I'm wrecked forever because Overton said this to Sinclair.
This is a good show.
My heart would be in Minneapolis and I wouldn't understand why.
It is Shakespearean. The show is so weirdly Shakespearean sometimes. Like, it gives these lines. Sitcoms hardly ever have, like, these, like, powerful lines. It's just that they're written too fast, that it's quick turnaround.
I literally have goosebumps about that line.
Yeah, it's just so. And what is people that want to like compare it to Friends is like, oh, what's your equivalent of it? Is it's always she's been you, Rachel. Rachel.
She's Rachel.
It's because she's Rachel. It's always been you, Rachel.
Fuck off. Fuck off.
Wipe my ass with
fuck
that.
Fuck off. My heart would be in Minneapolis and I wouldn't know why. Fuck off, Friends.
Okay.
Team Overton. Okay.
I want to live in the parallel universe where Living Single was the one that, like, hit it. Like, was on everybody's, like, OK Cupid circa 2009.
Yeah. I love Living Single, which I do love Living Single, but everybody's like, I love Friends. And I know we're trashing on a show that a lot of people really like. It's fine if
it's because you haven't seen Living Single.
So, Zach, we did a little bit of a rundown of the characters, but I think one thing that Living Single is known for is obviously it was a very important show in terms of Black sitcoms. And I think part of that is it wasn't afraid to talk about issues and take them on in a big way, whether that is gender, race, class, like there's all sorts of things, mental health that are all tied up in Living Single. And there's episodes about and through lines through a lot of episodes. And so I think we should talk about that. I think we should talk about how the show deals with big issues.
Yeah. So the first stop on our train, it's really at this point, you know, we're going to hit gender first.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like just like setting the overall ethos of the show, and obviously, like I said, I'm just like I'm a white girl watching this many years after it was released, so take it with a grain of salt. My take, like on the overall ethos of the show in terms of what it is trying to say when it tackles big issues, the framework that it's using. The question that comes up a lot over and over is essentially like, what do people who are together in kind of a disenfranchised community, what do those community members owe to each other? And how are they supposed to treat each other? And I think that's like a big context into which all of the issues that we deal with in Living Single are couched, whether that's gender, and we're talking about like how Black men are supposed to treat Black women, or whether it's race, and we're talking about how, you know, Black people with power are supposed to treat or should treat other Black people without as much power. I do feel like this is the central dynamic of the show.
It is. The theme that you pointed out before about the oppressed in one context being the oppressors in the other, or being the victim of trauma, and that teaching you to do behaviors that are traumatizing others, or victimizing others, that's a big thing that Living Single is interested in exploring. Big thing.
Yes, it's definitely true. One thing that I think is interesting when we're talking about like the politics of Living Single and trying to understand what they're trying to say, this is a show that is completely disinterested in white people. White people, they hardly show up in the background. They hardly show up in positions of power, right? It is a show that is entirely disinterested. Now, do I think that they are, like, they talk structurally, I think, around, like, okay, we agree that, like, the general rules under which we're operating is just, like, shit white people have put on us. But the vast majority of the show is peopled by Black people. It's wholly disinterested in white people. Which I think means then, like, when you're digging into issues and conflicts and you're making, like, the conscious choice of, like, we're pretty much excluding white people here for the vast majority of it. Like, a lot of the conflict then ends up being, like, inter-community, which is why I think, like, a lot of the thesis of the show has to do with, like, well, what do Black people within their own community owe to one another is ultimately, like, a question that comes up again and again and again in Living Single, which is, like, I think ultimately underpinned by, like, we don't give a shit about white people. And that's great. Like, that's I think, a fine place to start the show.
Yeah. There's an obvious, like, context of racism and just, like, living in a 90s type of world. But the understanding with this show is, yeah, that's a thing. We take it as read. That is a prerequisite to watching this show, is you need to understand that. And we are going to move on about talking about the community.
Yeah.
And how we behave towards each other. Like, the hair, the cut your hair episode.
Yeah.
It's a good example of this.
Yeah. I think it's great to, like, just jump into that one. And, like, we can talk about gender as well. But, like, I think we can talk about the hair episode and, like, the gala episode where Queen Latifah and her boyfriend, Khadijah and her boyfriend are going to that award ceremony where he's a doctor. Because I think these are, like, our richest texts that kind of best underline how this show is dealing with big issues.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's just run through the summary of the hair episode, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
It's a good episode, and it just effortlessly doesn't fall into a trope. Kyle is looking for a promotion. He's, like, pitching a project to his investment firm to, like, expand into Africa. And so he gives this big presentation. He's very excited. He thinks it's a done deal. But when he, like, pitches it to the executives, it's sort of like a lukewarm reaction, and he's a little disappointed, and they're like, we'll call you when we call you, is what they say. And then he's, like, trying to figure out, well, what was holding him back? What didn't he do well? And so he asks one of the people that's on the board, that is another Black man, to, like, give him some guidance or some advice.
You should be aware there is one stumbling block.
What?
It's your appearance. But this jacket is Armani, this vest is Versace, these pants are Cerruti. I mean, I could go on. Kyle, no, it's not your clothes. It's your hair.
My hair?
Yes.
What does my hair have to do with me becoming funds manager for this project?
Well, we don't think it's corporate enough.
It has never been a problem before.
Kyle, you don't get promoted around here by going against the grain.
And that guy says, who's a bit older than him, not very old, She's like a few years older than him in a different stage in his career. It's just one step above. And he says, it's your hair. You don't have a corporate look. Because he has...
He has dreads.
He has dreads. And they're just like short dreads. And it's like, that's not a corporate look. Mm-hmm. It looks unprofessional. You're going to be representing the firm. And we're not sure we trust you with that if this is going to be the face of the firm. And so he goes through this episode, so like soul searching about like, I'm always saying that the number one thing I care about is like money and like power and all that. But am I really that guy? Mm-hmm. I'm going to like cut my hair and just kowtow to these corporate executives. They are very meticulous. It was odd that they avoid explicitly making it a like you need to conform to a white world and their standards. They don't like explicitly say that ever. It's just very clear through the context.
Yeah.
What's going on? They don't hide it either.
Right, and it's very couched in like the cultural conversation around hair, right? Black hair has been inherently political in terms of like how black hair is styled, and that's essentially the struggle that we're going through. Is like, well, what hair is considered professional, right?
And so they have this like really good scene in this episode where the main cast, they're all sitting in the living room and they are talking about essentially the theme of what they have to compromise in order to advance in a world of white hegemony, and what they keep to themselves. You learn a lot about these characters in this conversation.
Right.
Regine is very much like, do what you gotta do. Your life,
Regine's
your success,
him
your security.
Try on wigs. Like, your success, your security. Regine is helping him try on wigs. She's like, baby, malicious compliance, wear the ugliest wig I have.
Yeah, not particularly help. I feel like every option she offered was way worse. And even like the eyes of that guy, it's not going to be great if you just show up in like a shaggy long black wig. I don't think you understood the assignment, Regine, but
I like your energy. I like what you're bringing.
Yep. She is very much like, do what you need to do to advance yourself and make it in this shitty world. Mm-hmm. Like, are you going to tell me that you care more about your hair than, you know, making money and like your career that you've worked on for all these years?
Again, Regine's thinking you care more about your conformity, or you care more about your pride than your security and your basic comfort. And like, again, Regine is all about the dollars and the cents.
We all have to compromise sometimes. And if changing your hair means helping Africa and getting paid, I say snip, snip.
And different characters are like talking about this. And it's very clear. One very subtle thing that they kind of show is that this is a new concept a little bit for Kyle.
Yep.
At least specifically to his hair. But this is not a surprise. This is not a foreign concept to the women in the show. They all have prior experience with their hair being very strictly regulated and criticized.
Yeah, although Sinclair's example was just Khadijah.
Yeah.
Khadijah just making sure she didn't get her hair shredded.
That was more of an OSHA thing, but...
But otherwise, yes, the women of Living Singles were all like, yeah, this is exactly what it's like constantly. Welcome to the club, buddy. Just wait till they also start talking to you about the cut of your blouse and the length of your skirt.
Yeah, this is something that they have had to live with their entire lives, this specific dimension of racism. But it's a 90s type of world, and he is like a 90s metrosexual. And so he is experimenting with his hair and his clothes and stuff, and has to navigate. This is new for him.
it is an interesting track to take in terms of, like, the villain, quote unquote, of this episode, of the hair episode, is not the white leadership of the board. They're like, bro, we are fine with your hair. Like, I have zero problem about it. The issue was not us, buddy. It was your friend, Lawrence. He is the one who brought your hair up and created a problem. And I think this is an interesting track to take.
It is an interesting track to take. You think you know how the episode is going to be. Like, boom, the shitty Tyler Perry villains are going to, like, be awful. And, you know, it's them. Like, you see the crusty old white dudes that are in business suits. That's never good news.
Never good news.
But in this meeting, because he eventually decides, no, I'm not going to cut my fucking hair. You can keep your promotion if that's what the terms are of this. I'm keeping my hair. I will not debase myself in this way. And the white dudes on the board are like, we don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's fine, bro. Like, do not care. It's your buddy over here, the only other black man, like, on the partnership or leadership board at this firm. He cares.
Yeah.
Interesting choice. Interesting.
Yeah, it's just like the context being like that there is discourse about, again, like the conversation that happened earlier in the show. Yeah. Where do you draw the line? When are you willing to play ball? What are you keeping?
Yeah.
And so it's implied very subtly that he was the guy that went all in on
100%. Yeah. And like,
I'm gonna do what I gotta do.
It's interesting because it's like. So it's not for me to like. Get into why that guy made the decision that he did, right? But it's an interesting thing to focus on from a creator's perspective. Like, if you're creating this show and you have a sitcom that's principally black cast, and you're trying to talk to their experience, like the black experience, and you make an episode about hair politics and about racism, and then the big bad of the episode turns out to be another person in the community. I'm just, it's an interesting choice to make. And it's not necessarily like, I'm not the person to tell you why, right?
Yeah.
But I do think that, like, it does underpin, like, if you're just like, if the point of the show is like, we're not fucking with white people in any major way, right? In terms of like, we don't, like, we take racism as a preconceived part of the show, but we're not really diving into like injecting whiteness any more than it needs to be in the show, then okay. But I do think there's like something meant to start a conversation about internalized racism and like what it means to make it. And I do feel like the biggest villain that you could possibly be in the living single universe is somebody who pulls the ladder up after them.
Yeah. Hammered through a lot about like black people that have made it and don't have any kind of solidarity for the people that haven't made it are that always the villain.
Yep. Yeah, it's a common villain in Living Single, right? There's an episode in season 4 where Khadijah's boyfriend is accepting an award for he's the best doctor boy in all of New York, and he's getting a doctor boy award, and all of the people that they meet at that party are like bougie black people who look down on Flavor magazine, right? They say, oh, Khadijah, what an ethnic name.
Well, this is Khadijah.
Khadijah, what a charming name. It's ethnic, isn't it?
Yes. Both my parents are ethnic.
10 to 1, you're a Vassar girl.
No, actually, I went to Howard.
Oh, how adorable. Go on, sister girl.
Right?
Yeah, they are somehow worse than any wasp on The Nanny. Like, these people just so aggressive in their condescension.
Yeah, and they're other black people. Like, they're black people as part of the show, and, like, they're the villains of the episode, right? And I just think that's like, it's interesting because, again, the worst person you can be in living single world is a black person who pulls the ladder up after them.
I want you to develop the idea of decentering white people, because that hair episode, you think that where they're going with this is it's going to be like the crusty old white dudes that are the villain, but they decline to do this. And I think specifically, if you said it was an odd choice or like an interesting choice, it's just because that is what the show is.
That is what the show is.
And it will, I agree. And it always, it's just about like the white hegemony is assumed. And it's how do you react to it, and what are we going to do with each other again? The guy, like, and again, they don't dehumanize that guy. That guy is not a villain, two-dimensional cutout, because they have this scene, because the show refuses to dehumanize people that are in this dynamic.
Right.
They have this final line where... like, the white people have left the room, and there's this awkwardness because Kyle has rejected the advice of this guy.
Yeah.
And, like, stood on principle. And so there's, like, Kyle didn't compromise, and the implication is this guy did compromise.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence?
Well, you know, I feel it's not in keeping with the company image.
You really need to loosen up. We were going to save this for the board meeting, Kyle, but we're going to go ahead with the project and promote you to funds manager.
Unless you want to take a stand about your goatee, I guess we're about done here. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well done.
Thank you. Kyle, no hard feelings, huh?
No feelings at all, man.
Look, I was just trying to help.
You see, that's the sad part. You actually believe that.
Yeah. I do.
And then he leaves, and we are left in a room with just that guy standing there uncomfortably thinking about his choices.
Right.
And they leave the camera on there for a bit longer. We get a beat, and then it ends the episode.
Yeah, I don't think that he's a villain as in, like, he was the one who did the bad thing to Kyle, but you're right, like, it's not like they're going to dehumanize this character. And again, that's why it's like, I can't speculate on what's going on there in terms of why that character made the choice he made. But you're right, it's a text, like, in Living Single in general is a text about decentering white people. And so when you do that, you have to figure out how you navigate conflict. When the big bad in most black people's life is just like white people, generally speaking. So how do you navigate conflict when you're decentering that from the narrative? And I think that's what Living Single wrestles with a lot, which is why the theme is like, what do members of a disenfranchised community owe to one another? And that's why your big bads are the, you know, black people who make it and pull the ladder up after them. Mm-hmm. But one thread that I did think was really interesting from what you were talking about, and it's something that I picked up on in sort of that that episode I was talking about where Khadijah's boyfriend is getting that award, is it's something that you're not, I think you would never see in a white sitcom, right? So if you think about the plot of that episode where Khadijah's boyfriend is accepting an award, they go to this party, snooty, you know, black people are mean to them and sort of like degrade them about their culture, and he tells them off.
Yeah, he gives like your classic
take this award and shove it.
Yeah, like giving like your grand speech behind a podium of this court is out of order.
Yeah,
like leaves.
You're out of order. Yeah, he gives a you're out of order speech 100%. And I think what's interesting about the resolution of this episode, like kind of what they come to and what they're coaching Khadijah's boyfriend on, is something that I don't think you will ever have to, or not have to, but that's maybe the wrong word, but that you would ever see in a white sitcom. Because what they're navigating is how you have, like how you maintain your pride while also getting what you want from people who are assholes and oppressors by playing their game and playing into the character that you want them or that they want you to be. But that's like, that's along the lines of what Khadijah says to her boyfriend, is something very similar to like, look, I understand that they were pieces of shit to you. I understand that they were really rude to you and I interpersonally, and that they were like essentially like exhibiting internalized racism, but they're powerful people who can control your career. So there is absolutely no shame in playing their little game a little bit, sucking it up, taking it on the chin so that you can achieve the safety and the progress of having like a solid career.
I saw my parents get sucked in by bougie people like that. I don't want to wake up one morning and discover that I'm skipping surgery to go off skeet shooting off the back of my yacht.
With your aim, you couldn't hit the ocean. Just because you don't want to be like those people doesn't mean you can't take advantage of what they've got.
Yeah, maybe you got a point. But you can't tell me that you wouldn't have done the same thing I did up at that podium.
Absolutely not. I would have done with that award what you told them to do with it.
And I don't think you'd ever see that in a white sitcom. Why?
Yeah.
Because a white sitcom character gets to have pride and gets to like have that big moment of telling everybody off with no like life-altering career detriment. And where I think like in when you're coming, like writing from a black perspective, you are constantly living a life where everything is controlled by white people who want you to act in a certain way. And so you have to figure out a way where you create a new system to maintain your dignity, get the shit you need out of the white people by acting a certain way. And like have that not necessarily be something that's looked on or looked at as like a degradation of character. And so you're still maintaining your dignity and you're getting the bag from the white people or from the people in power, from the racist institution, whatever it is. And I think it's an interesting line to walk that you would never see in a white sitcom.
Yeah. We don't want to give a lot of real estate to the Friends comparison. Because this show deserves to stand on its own and be compared, like, spoken of by itself. But in Friends, it is a privilege and a delight to have the careers that these people have. It's a fun game that they get to play. And, you know, Chandler's sometimes bored by his job, but he likes all the toys. Everybody is, like, having their fantasy. And it's not really a big theme in Friends at all. About you having to like, you're like pressured to like cut out a pound of flesh to like pay the toll of operating in this world. And I think you're absolutely right. This is just, it's all the time in Living Single. There's this very interesting and powerful interaction in the hair episode between Regine and Kyle. Where it's in that living room scene I described, where everybody's comparing their experiences. And Regine is sort of like 100% pro compromise. Like, and so she's giving him like this pep talk. She's being very tender with him and giving him almost like a motherly pep talk.
Yeah.
She's like fixing his lapels and like straightening up his tie. And she's saying, you know, you're going to go out there and you are going to play their game and you are going to rise through the ranks.
Yep.
And when you have power, you can change things. But for now, in order to get you to have that power, you are going to have to play their game.
Yep.
But my dreads are an expression of my culture. If I change my hair, wouldn't that be selling out?
Kyle, you're a stockbroker. You're a sellout either way.
Maybe you should try working within the system just till you get into a position of power. And then you can tell everybody else how to wear their hair.
And this is, in a lot of ways, we were talking about, like, Regine and the choices she's made and her conception of, like, finding, like, understanding feminism, but also wanting to, like, be secure. Mm-hmm. And these are very similar things of like, we don't get to pick the game that we're playing. We just get to pick how we're playing it. And that's the choice that that character makes. And it's just a very interesting scene.
100%. 100%. And I think that, like, here's the thing about the show, too, that I feel like if Kyle had cut his hair, no one on that show would have looked down on him for making that choice. Every single last one of them would have understood.
Yeah, they were so soft on it. It was, they structured it almost, it had like a very light, very special episode vibe about like, this is a morality tale where you could tell he wasn't going to do it just because of how it was structured. But
right,
you're right. The way that the characters operated is, it was very clear. The show made very clear that we, if that's what you got to do, it's what you got to do.
Yeah, exactly. There would have been no love lost. And I, like, again, like, it's somewhat often coached in the show that, like, you will have to make compromises in order to survive in this world. And if you try to run on just pride and righteous, like, righteous indignity alone, the racist system that has been set up will destroy you. That's essentially what Khadijah is saying to her boyfriend in that episode.
In, I think, a lot of instances, it is the woman that has to, like, help the man, like, say, you're going to have to make a decision about your relationship with Pride. And it can be hard to watch, but, like, both Regine to Kyle and Khadijah to her boyfriend, they both have a similar conversation about that.
Yeah, absolutely. That comes up over and over and over again. Yeah, so it's just, like, to be honest, like, going into the show, having not watched it at all, I obviously knew that this show was going to tackle questions of, like, race and racism and how that interweaves into these characters' everyday lives. But I was honestly surprised about how they handled it and about how it's a show where, like, we're just completely decentering white people. And this is now a question of, like, how do we in our community deal with this bullshit? And so I thought, I just thought it was an interesting, and for me personally, an unexpected tract.
Yeah, because of, like, the sitcom genealogy of living single is related to a different world. A different world is the Cosby Show's baby.
Yep.
I think I had an association that this was going to be, like, a black capitalist show that it was Cosby-ish in its conception of what you need to do in the public sphere. Mm-hmm. And absolutely has a completely different message than you get from other shows from this era. And I was surprised because it's like the early 90s, and I think it does better than some shows I've seen than properties that, like, came out now. It's so much more nuanced, so much more empathetic, so much more loving of, I get it, babe, you didn't pick the situation, but here's what's happening.
Yeah, you have to choose from a shitty set of options in a shitty situation. And, like, again, nobody's going to judge you however you choose. You need to react to make it work. Unless, of course, again, within the, like, the framework that the show puts in front of you, unless, of course, the action you take then, like, infringes upon another member in your community, right? So, like, Kyle, we don't care if you have to make a shitty choice in order to appease, like, the racist system put in front of you. But if the shitty choice you make infringes on Regine, right, and, like, and degrades Regine's autonomy and humanity, then you are now also the villain. I don't know if you have more to say about gender and living single.
No, I think we nailed it.
I feel like it didn't actually, like, it's, again, it's the show where, like, it just so strongly presupposes, like, the context of, like, a strong, like, a world of very, like, defined women who are running the world and calling the shots. And so, yes, there's this predefined text The world is fucking racist. The world is fucking sexist. Okay, well, what are we going to do as girls? That I think Living Single shows us. And I will say, like, as a show, Living Single does feel the most that I've seen thus far of just, like, capturing the spirit of, like, what it is to hang around with your girlfriends and just, like, basically talk shit on men. It's Living Single, baby. The scene, like, they're regularly all just getting ready together. And, like, ugh, the memories brought back by that.
The club episode, it sent me into such nostalgia. I was like back in like your dorm. we're getting ready for the club. We're talking about pee milk.
Oh my god, you didn't just say pee milk. No. No, oh my, okay. I know the person with whom I live today was leaving and was recounting all of the things that he needed to bring before he left the house, and I said, "Baby, pee milk. Just remember pee milk."
Hold up. I'm going to... Okay.
You're right.
I'm going to see if I can get all of them.
What is
it's money.
Yeah.
Pee, I'm wondering about. Money?
What do you mean you're running around pee?
A phone. Okay. Phone, ID, license? No, why would you need ID and license? Lube. Lip gloss.
Lip gloss, baby.
Lip gloss. Lip gloss,
baby.
And then, of course, your keys.
And then,
email. It was a Cosmopolitan article, right?
It was either Cosmo or, like, 17 magazine, something like that. I cannot believe you brought up pee milk to me today, the way that I still say pee milk anytime I leave my house without my purse. Phone, money, ID, lip gloss, keys. Phone, money, ID, lip gloss, keys. Pee milk, yeah. The girlies getting ready in their bathroom, big pee milk energy.
We should probably explain to the audience, just you have to do a lot of context clues for some of these cul-de-sacs we do. But there was a Cosmo, I believe it was a Cosmo article that was just like, "Hey babes, you're going out to the club, you need to remember, all you need to remember is pee milk. Your phone, money, ID, lip gloss, keys." And so there was our first semester of freshman year. We were going to like a club, but we were 18. So it was just a shitty like 18 plus club.
I was so bad.
And so we were watching this episode of Living Single, and it was sensory. I was there. I was like wrapped in your cheetah print snuggie.
Oh my god, hold on.
Oh, it, folks, she still has it. She still has the leopard print snuggie.
Look at that shit.
Ancient. That's an ancient artifact.
She is sacred. She sits with me and supports my back at my desk chair every day. It's my back pillow. It's this cheetah print snuggie.
But yeah, so like, because, so I was sitting on your elevated bed in like the dorm that was painted like a fucking preschool. And like in the, it just like, I was ready in 5 seconds because I'm a schlubby gay, and we were just waiting on Crystal for 3 hours.
Of course, for 3 hours. It's like, you're ready in like 10 minutes. I'm ready in like an hour. The other girlies are ready in 2. And then that last hour, Crystal's still got work to do. She's the Regine.
Yeah, 1 a.m., maybe Crystal's rolling out.
Crystal is the Regine of our friend group, for sure.
It was worth the time, though. She looked great.
She always did. She always came out stunning. Yeah,
so
the getting ready, it was just such, like, it was gender joy.
Remember how we used to give fake names to the guys who would try to talk to us?
I was Alexis.
I was Dominique, right?
Ooh, tonight I'll be Shaquan.
Yes. That suits me, yes.
All right, all right, all right. I am
ready to go. I got the slamming outfit on and my ponytail. See what I'm saying? With that, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, we all look good tonight. Yes.
She's a brick.
Down, 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 down. Oh, she's mocking my dad.
It was. It was so innocent and just like playful and real. I can't think of a scene. I keep falling into the same trap. I can't even criticize those writers anymore. I can't think of a scene in Friends where this kind of just like...
No, Friends was not a show for the girlies. Like, it is a show for the girlies, but it's not about the girlies.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Well, or just like that like slice of life, like, this is real. This is not like a heightened like fantasy version of life. This is just... a little bit of real life.
It's you and your girls in a 90s kind of world. I'm glad I got my girls. You know, that's living single, baby.
I'm gonna watch some more after this.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah, so that's how they deal with race. I do think that and we talk gender. I do think that the other thing that they hit is mental health. There's a very interesting episode where Khadijah has to see a therapist. She's under a lot of stress. She's running a magazine. Her boyfriend, or her ex-boyfriend, her ex-fiance, now has a new girlfriend. And Khadijah's not really sleeping much. She's working two jobs to pay bills for the magazine and her life. And it's hard and it's stressful. And so Khadijah has to go see a therapist. And so essentially, I think what this episode challenges a lot of is really two things. It's breaking down the stigmatization of mental health. I know for a lot of disenfranchised communities, even the idea of like mental health as something to care about can be often like a struggle for people who suffer with it to get others in the community to understand. So there's that element of it. But I do think that what this episode is trying to push back on a lot is this idea of the strong Black woman. And that is not me trying to say that like there are not strong Black women. Of course, what I'm trying to mention here is more the trope of like there are Black women who are somehow there are Black women who are somehow superhumanly strong, who can just take heaps and heaps and heaps of struggle and other people's problems, neglect their own personal health and their own personal well-being, and solve everything for everybody else, take care of everything for everybody else, because they are somehow superhuman in this way, right? They are these faceless, nameless, women who just take on everybody else's emotional load and physical load. And I think this episode tries to challenge that a lot. And a lot of what the therapist is pushing Khadijah on is like, well, what are you doing for you? How are you feeling for you? Yeah. And trying to remove all of the other people who Khadijah feels responsibility for out of the conversation.
I've been thinking about how much I've given up to focus on this magazine. I mean, time away from my family and friends. And a few fine men. Girl, I mean real fine. And lately, I haven't even enjoyed working on Flavor.
You're an amazing person, Khadijah. You persevere. You achieve. You take care of so many people. But somewhere along the way, you stop taking care of yourself.
Well, I guess it would be kind of interesting to talk to you about that from time to time.
Hey, the state medical board said I'm allowed to do that.
Damn, my friends are gonna wear me out over this one.
I know. Psychotherapy doesn't get much respect in our community. My father keeps asking me why didn't I pick something more real, like plastic surgery. Then that's an issue for me and my therapist.
It's a good episode.
It's a very good episode. At first, it was reminding me of One Day at a Time, the episode that we watched. And I believe we discussed on this show.
Actually, yeah, it has some relationship to it.
Yeah. So to recap, for people that listen to us religiously, One Day at a Time is a show where they talk a lot about mental health and like the workload yes. and the unrealistic expectations that you can throw on yourself as a single mother. And like you can somehow opt out of being human because it's inefficient to be. And, you know, I'm sorry, it's actually, I don't have room in my schedule to have needs. And so, we're so just gonna not do that. I just don't. It's fine.
Opt out. Thank you.
And so there was like a big parallel there. We are, Jessica and I are long standing Melissa Harris Perry fans.
God. It's been so long since I've thought about Melissa Harris Perry. Yes.
Yeah. She was on MSNBC for a while until she was just too hot for MSNBC. She quit live on air, did like a take this job and shove it. Classic icon behavior. Love Melissa Harris Perry. I read her books, both Barbershop and Sister Citizen. Sister Citizen.
I read Sister Citizen.
Yeah, Sister Citizen is a beautiful book. Incredibly human. Melissa Harris Perry is a professor, and she wrote Sister Citizen, a book about the relationship of American Black women and pop culture, and that relationship of seeing yourself reflected and like that influencing your understanding of self. She has this amazing metaphor where she talks about this psychological study of where psychologists put people in a room that was like crooked, like the walls were like at a sometimes up to like 45 degree angle, and like all the furniture was like crooked, and they sat the test subjects on a ball and asked them to balance themselves so that they are upright. And it was found, and people consistently could go up to 45 degrees and report themselves upright based off of like the context of the room that they're in, and just sort of like accommodating it until to the point of like falling over. And just a great metaphor for like pop culture in some ways telling you who you are, and that being something that you need to unpack and interrogate.
And so the strong Black woman emerges as this internal community narrative about the ability of Black women under all circumstances to be able to manage, to be able to do well, to be able to stand up for family, for community, for church, for spouses, and to do so almost naturally, or essentially, or as an inborn right. And in fact, so strong is this notion of the strong Black woman that it becomes a kind of racial imperative. If you are weak, if you are sad, if you need help, then you are not only sort of failing in the terms of the general American individualism, rugged individualism, but you're actually failing the race. You are actually generating shame in your neediness, in your desire for help. When I do focus groups in the book, as I talk to African American women about what it feels like to be this strong Black woman who confronts all trials and tribulations on behalf of those she loves and perseveres with little attention to her own needs, this was a common response. Sometimes I am very, very much jaded. You're angry because you're still going. It's so repetitious. Your life has become, you know, I have to do this. I have to work. I'm working from check to check. It's like things never get better for me. I never experience a progression. So you never get to make that transition over into the real woman. And I think the real woman's life is a whole lot better than being this extra strong soldier woman. I want to be that real woman. I don't want to be a soldier all my life.
I think about that metaphor all the time. So and I thought about that concept a lot with that episode. And like
100%.
Just Khadijah not her understanding of herself is that she needed to be the archetypical strong Black woman. Mm-hmm. Anything other than just like being a strong, independent Black woman that has pride and like can do anything is weakness, and is like letting yourself down. It's letting your community down. Just so much she was putting on her shoulders in that episode.
100%.
Yeah, and it was just, again, this empathetic, loving, mm-hmm. like, babe, you
gotta let it go.
You allow yourself.
Unburden yeah. yourself. You may be bipolar. Let it go, girl.
Yeah. I hope that she kept seeing that therapist and they unpacked the closeted homosexuality.
Yeah. Never hear from her again. I'm assuming, you know, I have to believe Khadijah got there.
Yeah. She kept going. She just didn't mention it. It wasn't part of the plot anymore, but eventually she got there.
Yeah. Never see the therapist again, but yeah, let's hope it digs. It turns a light on in that closet, at least, Khadijah.
Yeah.
Zach, we got to wrap it up. I gotta hit the dusty trail.
Oh, 7:30. All right. So here's what's going on, folks. I come from the future. I'm gonna tell you how your day's gonna go right now. You're gonna go, and you're gonna review us on your platform of choice.
Oh, thank you so much for having done that in the future.
Yeah. You did great. It was very sweet. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we got our TikTok. You're going to check that out. You're going to check out the content
that
we
got
going on there.
We got a TikTok. We got an Instagram. We got an email. You can hit us up there because it was on at gmail.com. We are in the places. We are on the web. You can come. You can find us. Or we'll be here next week. We're a Monday show now. So come kick it with us next Monday. We'll be here.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. 100%. Y'all stay safe out there, and just remember, Snape is a fictional character, and you're not married.
You can't tulpa him into existence.
Yeah,
but you can.
The ancient
tulpa
Jewish
Overton.
Tradition.
You can absolutely tulpa Overton. So keep doing that one.
It feels like it's just a long walk to talk about the secret. Okay.
All right. Well, bye bye.
Because it was on, because it was on, because it was on, rate, review, and subscribe to, because it was on. Whoop, 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 whoop.